Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Women Arsecast June Mailbag Edition. That's right, it is the 1st of June as we record. So technically, well, not technically, that definitely makes this the June Mailbag. And we did one in May, so why not? With me as ever to go through some of your questions which were submitted on Twitter. So thanks for all of those is Alex Ibaceta. Alex, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. Feels weird to be in off-season again, but thankfully there's a lot of positive news to talk about this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. Since the last time we recorded, obviously we recorded just a couple of days after the end of the season last time, and quite a lot of news since then. Obviously, I think, I can't remember whether these had happened the last time we recorded, but Steph Catley and Noel Maritz have extended their contracts. Caitlin Ford has extended her contract. And of course, Vivian Miedema has extended her contract. And obviously there are some questions around that as well. But just to kind of, I guess, get your initial reaction to Viv extending her contract. And the last time we recorded, that news broke about 2 hours after we finished recording, which instantly dated a lot of our kind of speculations, etc. But
yeah,
in our defense, in about March we spoke about this and kind of predicted that she might sign on for 1 year and see how things go, which is pretty much exactly what she's done. First of all, were you surprised? And I guess you know, because you also wear a Barcelona hat as well, how happy or maybe unhappy were you with the news?
I mean, just looking at it from a, my emotions were kind of mixed in the sense of, I really wanted her to be at Barcelona, but at the same time for Arsenal, losing Miedema was, you know, one of the worst things that could possibly happen. But yeah, we did speak about it. And to be honest, I was very shocked because I did think that she was already out the door. I think looking at it from a very pessimistic way, I think we gave her enough reasons to leave, if I'm being quite honest. And the prospect of playing at Barcelona is obviously big. But then obviously that rides on a lot of different things at Barcelona, the playing time, the players there, and all that kind of factors in. But then I think the best possible outcome, I don't think she was ever going to sign a contract more than 1 year. So for Arsenal, kind of we got the best possible outcome from Viv in the sense that we're with her for one more year, and kind of need to prove a point in that sense, because then again, we have to look at, you know, Leah Williamson is on the same boat. So if everything goes wrong, then we lose Viv and Leah at the same time next season, but let's not think about that just yet. But no, I was overall, I was shocked because I was more inclined of, you know, yeah, we gave her enough reason to be like, look, I don't want to be here anymore. And there's more potential somewhere else. But the fact that she stayed, I think is a big compliment to the club, and hopefully it is. It's not just empty promises, if that makes sense. But no, we all know how big it is to have Viv, and I'm really hopeful next season that we could actually compete for the title and win it this time around.
Yeah. I think as well, in the cold light of day, there are a few things that have gone in Arsenal's favour that maybe weren't entirely of Arsenal's making, in that she's very settled in London, in St Albans, and she owns her house, and she really likes playing in the WSL. And I think on balance, the prospect of kind of playing for Barcelona and winning 6-0 every week maybe didn't appeal to her as much as she'd like to win the Champions League. I think she's been very clear that there is no way that whatever happens that she will finish her career with Arsenal. So even if Arsenal go really, really well, I think in the best case scenario, it's like another 3 years. And then I think she'd really like to experience another league. That's my read of it.
Yeah.
So I think like to get her for another year, is great, obviously better than the alternative. I also think as a fan, I think it's really enthusing, first of all, that her and Leah, because Leah signed a very similar contract this time last year and then was convinced to extend even further. It's encouraging that there's that at least cautious optimism among the players and that they're a group that like being together as well. Like Arsenal have kept the core of that, those kind of 14, 15 players we really saw play lots of minutes last season are all staying, and we've got questions over that. But I also think as a fan, it's good to have like players who are pushing the club like that and saying, okay, you only keep me on condition. And, you know, hopefully keep Arsenal a bit honest. So, yeah, I was surprised in the end. I was told in about March that a one-year extension was very much on the cards. But then when I didn't hear anything for a few weeks, I thought, well, that's obviously changed. And like you, I never thought she'd sign for longer than that. I think there's some suggestion that the contract might be a one-plus-one deal. But I don't think that makes a huge amount of difference, because if it is a 1+1, I'm sure it's the player that triggers that extra year, because there would be no point whatsoever in the club being the ones that trigger that extra year, because obviously they'll do it. I don't know. Maybe it's incentive based. Maybe it's like if Arsenal win the Champions League, that triggers the next year. Like, I don't know. But I think basically whatever the contract is, the understanding is kind of the same, which is next spring she'll have another look, essentially. But the longer you can get Miedema for, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, really positive news. I just wish it would have come out a few hours earlier. Didn't instantly date the last podcast. Okay, so let's crack on with a question. Again, we had loads and loads of questions submitted on Twitter, and really we could only ask about a quarter of them at the most. And I've grouped some together because there are some kind of similar themes. So the first one, well, it's two really, I'm grouping together because they deal with very similar themes. So Marieke von Litt asks, loads of renewals, Caitlin, Noel, Steph, Viv, Leah, Lotta. What, in your opinion, does that say about the atmosphere and Jonas's vibe at the club? And on a very similar line, Dolan, ZZZ at DolanZZZ8. After a couple of years with high turnover of big players like Van der Donk, Roord, how much of an advantage do you think the contract renewals we're learning about will contribute to next season, particularly with Chelsea and especially City losing a few big players and associated stability?
Yeah, it's really positive, not to kind of toot our own horn, but I think that how close we got, I mean, looking solely at the WSL, how close we got to winning the league, I think it's very important that we're keeping a lot of the same players that were there this season. And you give Jonas, you know, his first season, it went really well. You give him time to progress into next season with more or less the same players, and a lot of key players at that, is really big. I think it's kind of, I'm trying not to get too hopeful because Arsenal, but it's big in the sense that Man City are losing players. Chelsea are kind of going to lose a few big names in there potentially, on and off the pitch. But then, so to have Arsenal going into next season being the most consistent out of those top three, I think is going to give us a big advantage, especially when we still have Viv to score those goals and have that incentive to do better than they did this season. I mean, I'm going into this next season hopeful, and I think the players know that as well, that looking all around and looking at the players that we have and Jonas's motivation and the way that the club is progressing and potentially getting a lot of, you know, just improvements off the pitch could be big for Arsenal. And looking at all that on paper, we're gonna say this on paper because who knows what's going to happen on the pitch. It's looking really good, and the players know that. And if I'm being honest, you know, 1 year on your contract, let Viv, let Leah, let everyone kind of win what they need to win in the next season, and then they're off happy, if that makes sense. It's like a little happy ending. But I think it's looking really good for next season, and these signings are a big testament to the potential that Arsenal have in this next season.
Yeah, I think when I look at Chelsea winning the league by 1 point, I think there's two things that made a big difference. The first is Sam Kerr, obviously. But the other one is the stability that they had, that they weren't turning over lots of players. Obviously, they have to rebuild their midfield a little bit with G going and Melanie Leupolz on maternity leave. So as far as Chelsea are concerned, that's as close to upheaval as they get. Man City as well, they're losing lots of big players, and obviously they'll sign lots of good players. But yeah, you could hopefully be looking at a scenario where it takes them a little bit of time to bed in next year, whereas that was Arsenal last year. I think the other thing to say here as well is Arsenal brought in three players in January, which I think should be looked at as signings for this coming season, basically. So Hafaeli, who unfortunately we didn't see very much of, Stina, who we saw plenty of, but she's had adaptation and things like that. And then we've got Laura Weinreuter kind of as a meaningful rotation option with Noel Maritz. So there's three signings that were made in January that I really think should be considered signings for next year. And they're already integrated. And only one, no, actually two of them will be going to the Euros. But so, you know, it's I think that's really, really positive as well. But some really surprised news that broke on Sunday evening. And when I found out about this a couple of hours before the announcement, it's one of those things I really hate sitting on, because it's so surprising and it's such a kind of bombshell. But at the same time, you kind of want to hint to people that something's about to go down, but I couldn't say it in as many words. But obviously, Kim Little has taken the decision to go on loan to OL Reign for the summer. So she's joining them today officially, and will play like their next 6-7 matches before joining up with Arsenal for the first day of pre-season. And, you know, just information on top of that, I'm told that Kim really wanted to do this, that otherwise for her, it would have been more than 4 months between games. And she felt that that would have been bad for her fitness, and she wants to keep ticking over. Obviously, she has history with Reign and with the coach, Laura Harvey, who she's played under at Arsenal and Reign when they were Seattle Reign. And Reign as well, they're losing Rose Lavelle and Quinn, I believe, for a couple of games for CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers. So kind of it certainly makes a lot of sense for Reign. Makes some sense for Kim. I suppose there's a question about how much sense it makes for Arsenal, but we've got two questions on that. And the first one is from Gunnosaurus Fan at Beltran's Old Mole, who has been a guest on this podcast as well. With Kim going on loan to Reign, do you think that might precipitate a transition in Arsenal's midfield? And in that case, do you think it will be Frieda or a new signing? And John Booth at John Booth 74, Kim obviously knows her body better than I do, but are you at all worried about her playing a number of games this summer on the back of a full season for Arsenal? So what do you reckon, first of all, about Kim's move, how much sense it makes for Arsenal, and whether that might lead to a slight transition next season in midfield?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I've had time to kind of sit on it and think my opinion about it, and I've came to no conclusion, basically. Because it goes back and forth between, you know, Kim Little retired from the national team to give her body a rest and be able to kind of recuperate from everything. And Arsenal have had, you know, a long season, and now she's going to go off for the entire summer and play in the NWSL, which is a completely different pace, completely different game. Even the pitches, you know, you're playing on a lot of artificial turf, and it's just a very big change. So in that sense, I wouldn't say concerned, because, you know, Kim is a professional. She wouldn't really do this if she wasn't ready. You know, she did retire from the national team because of that. So, you know, she is able to make these decisions in a very responsible way. And I mean, if there's one player that's responsible, it's definitely Kim Little. So I trust her in the sense that she's well aware of kind of what this entails, going to the NWSL and then coming back to England and, you know, starting the preseason, starting the, you know, the Women's Champions and qualifiers quite early as well. So I think she knows what she's doing, but it is obviously a big concern, you know, if Kim Little kind of injures herself, there goes a big chunk of our midfield right away. But I think on the caveat of kind of changing the Arsenal midfield, I think it is possible to kind of replacement is obviously not the right word for Kim Little, but if she does get injured, if she does need less playing time, I think we do have the capacity to kind of, I wouldn't say fill her in, because I think we would have to change our kind of midfield balance if we put in a Freedom Adam or a Manu Ibuchi, for example. But I think it is possible with the players that, like, the quality of players that we have in those positions, I don't think it's going to be a major kind of rebuild in the sense that the quality is still going to be quite high. But obviously, you know, you have the fear of Kim Little getting injured, but I would assume that, again, she's a very responsible player. So I'd assume that they're going to manage her load quite well in the NWSL, whether that be Arsenal doing it from here, or the NWSL doing it, or her doing it herself. I'm confident that she's going to manage her load quite well for her to feel comfortable. And at the end of the day, you know, if all these players, all of our players are playing the Euros, yes, they're going to be tired, but they're going to be in form come preseason and come the Women's Champions League qualifiers. And if you have a Kim Little that's kind of off form, then that doesn't really do us any favors either. So I'm looking at it on the positive side that we're going to get a very comfortable and fit Kim Little, like, right off the start of the season. So looking at it that way, I could see it benefiting us quite a lot.
Yeah, I think there's a few things to say about this. I think, first of all, she's going over today. Well, she's already over in Seattle, and she starts training today. She doesn't have her first game till June the 18th. So she's got like 2.5 weeks of ramping up to competition again. And then, you know, she'll have, I think there are 7 games while she's there. And then she'll come back for the first day of pre-season. I'm sure she won't do the same pre-season training as everyone else. I'm sure that they'll consider her, you know, they'll consider her tuned to some degree. But then there isn't really a game for Arsenal, like, because pre-season starts on August the 15th. I don't think the starting date for next season's WSL is public yet. I haven't been able to find it. I think it starts a bit later because of the Euros, because the Euros finish on July the 31st. So, you know, she'll finish up there. And then there'll be, because the first Champions League qualifier that Arsenal are involved in is September the 20th or 21st. So there's like another 5 weeks after pre-season training. Again, I don't know exactly when the WSL starts. So essentially, she's going to go to Seattle now, couple of weeks training, 7 games, come back, and then have like another 4 weeks potentially training before another game. So I don't think, like, I think load-wise, Arsenal should be able to manage that. As to whether it precipitates a transition away, I mean, like you say, she could get injured. That is obviously a flight risk here. And so, you know, how will she start the season? Will she need a rest in the middle of the season, like some of the players who went to the Olympics were given? I mean, I don't really know the answers. I would be surprised. Like, Kim played by far and away the most minutes for Arsenal this season. She was way over 3,000 minutes, and no one else had that many. However, obviously, she retired from international football. Now, I don't think she retired from international football entirely for physical reasons. I think that maybe Scotland are going through a bit of a transition and are possibly unlikely to qualify for the next World Cup. So, you know, maybe it was a slightly political decision as well. But if there is like a transition, or if next season it's necessary to start without Kim, it could be Frieda, it could be a new signing. Like, personally, I still think Jordan Nobbs is a number 8. And I think we have a brilliant number 8 sitting there who's going to be fit for the start of next season, because Jordan's injury unfortunately only just rules her out of the Euros, but she's expected to be okay for the beginning of pre-season. I'd love to just see us play Jordan at number 8. I think she can play number 10, but I really see her as an 8. So I'd just love to see her a bit more involved in that position personally. Whether that will happen, I don't know. I do think there'll be a signing in midfield, but maybe as a kind of more of a Leovolti backup. We've got a couple of questions around kind of, I guess, behind the scenes additions. So Leontine Dawn at Leontine Dawn. I understand that Jonas wants to extend his staff. Any news on that? Which functions we should think of? And similarly, L at Grass Seasons, do you have any idea about the roles of additional staff they're hiring behind the scenes, and how that level of investment compares to other big European clubs? The thing I can say on this information-wise is that Arsenal have hired another strength and conditioning coach called Paul DeRoche. He's moving over from the academy to join the team, and that's an addition to the team, not a replacement, is my understanding. And personally, I really like the idea of these kind of coaches moving around different departments of the club, so you build up like a real club intelligence and club IQ. And also, we heard, you know, the back end of last season that Jonas wants to strengthen links to the under 15s and under 16s teams, because he feels that particularly in Europe, the physical issue was quite a big one for Arsenal. So, you know, if it strengthens those links, that's potentially good news. So that's one I know about. But what about you, Alex? Like in terms of, you know, other additional staff, I guess. You know, I guess how enthused are you by the idea of another strength and conditioning coach? And are there other areas that you think Arsenal should maybe address?
Well, I think given the history of Arsenal, another strength and conditioning coach should come to a joy for all of us. I think obviously the biggest kind of concern that we've had in Arsenal in particular have been injuries and kind of players going down and having really long recoveries, which it's not all down to the staff in the club, for example, but there are a lot of ways of kind of avoiding that beforehand. And if you have a small team looking over this, then it's not going to be good. But if you expand the team, you need to have a big team in order for this to work flawlessly. And obviously it's not going to happen from one season to another, but if you look at Lyon, if you look at Chelsea, if you look at all these clubs that have a very, very big kind of staff looking over this particular kind of area of the club in terms of strength and conditioning. And now, it's not only just, you know, on and off the pitch, it's kind of the whole health of the player, whether it's at home, again, the menstrual cycles, the load, the muscular, it's kind of, you need to, in order for this to kind of really, really work, you need to personalize each player and play to their strengths and weaknesses and know what works and doesn't. And this isn't going to work until you expand the team big enough that it's going to be, you know, feasible. If one, two, three people are overlooking the entire squad, I mean, that's really going to be really hard on them. So I think any expansion of the strength and conditioning and the medical staff is always going to be welcomed. And it's always going to be needed if they want to, you know, if Jonas wants to increase that physicality, then you're definitely going to need more people on the staff that are going to aid you and focus solely on that, if that makes sense. I think that would be it. And then, you know, the rest of the staff, it would be more of, does Jonas want to have another analyst? Do they want to have, you know, opposition analysts specifically for that flying around and kind of looking at, you know, the Women's Champions League? There's only so much that people can watch and so much that Jonas can understand. If you have someone specifically looking at that, then that's going to help a lot, for example. So that's kind of the two that first come to my mind in that sense.
Yeah, I think the physical side is a big side for Jonas, and I can see why. I do think, you know, you look at the Wolfsburg, particularly second leg, and we've all seen the games against Chelsea. I don't think this was that much the case last season, but we've certainly seen us outmuscled by Chelsea. And, you know, Jonas highlighted teams who go like player for player marking. So even Hoffenheim do that. And in the second Hoffenheim game, you know, Arsenal got thrashed 4-1. So I think that's a big side for him. And I think when you look at the signings he's made in the spine of the team, Stina Blackstenius and Hafaeli, you know, both like very physical players, I think that's kind of what he'll look for in the spine of the team. But also I just think on the kind of, yeah, on the strength and conditioning side, on the kind of physical side, I think he just sees that as really important, particularly because of the style of football that Arsenal are looking to play, that kind of counter-pressing kind of style. So I think that one really makes the most sense, to be honest. So I think it stands to reason that that's the first appointment we've seen. I don't know, like I know last summer they appointed a full-time psychologist, and obviously they brought in Gary Lewin last summer to head up kind of the medical department and sports science department. So, and in terms of analysis and things like that, I'm not sure what the actual plans are. I think the other thing that Jonas has talked about a lot on the physical side, if you look at the stats about ball in play, in the Women's Champions League, it is so much higher than the WSL. And this is why Jonas always talks about the multi-ball system and it being baffling to him that it's not in the WSL, because when the ball goes out of play, it disappears for about a minute, particularly for the teams who play in bigger stadiums and kick the ball in the stand, and it takes like a minute for a throw-in to get taken. That doesn't happen in the Women's Champions League. They have multi-ball, and most other leagues have multi-ball. And I think one of the reasons he thinks that English teams have underperformed in the Champions League is for that reason, because the players aren't as kind of, you know, they get bigger breathers in the WSL. And actually, I read an interview with Joe Montemurro at the beginning of last season, who said he changed his training regimes ahead of Champions League games for that reason, like to change the stimulus and make sure that the training sessions were more intense and that there was less standing around and listening in the training session, and it was much more, right, every second of this session we keep going, because in the Women's Champions League, the ball goes out for a throw-in, it comes straight back in. And I think that's a big thing for Jonas. So I can see why strength and conditioning is the first place that they've added. Let's have a hypothetical question, because I love these, from John Brannigan at John Brannigan 17. You can only make one signing for Arsenal this summer. Which position would you make it in?
Oh, that's a brutal question. Oh, boy.
I know my answer.
Do you want to go first, Tim?
Yeah, sure. For me, a defensive midfielder to back up / rotate with Leovolti. I think we'll see that. I don't have any names at this moment in time. I think we'll see that. I think we'll see perhaps again, maybe a bigger player. And I mean in terms of stature rather than reputation necessarily, because that's a big part of the spine of the team. Now, obviously, Leovolti was brilliant in the second half of last season. I think gave Jonas exactly what he wanted in that role, but we don't really have any backup. I think Frieda is not a number six. Kim's not really a number six. Like, it's a gap. For me, I cheat a bit on this question, but I really want to sign a defensive midfield player who can also play at centre back, to be perhaps that fourth choice centre back, which is going to be another gap because Anna Patton's going back to Villa on loan. Jen Beattie and Simone Boye will leave, so there'll only be three centre halves. So I'd love to see a defensive midfielder who can also play centre back. I also think that's a smart thing to do in a squad as well, because it would keep that player involved for them to be, you know, potentially a backup, maybe more than a backup, maybe someone to really challenge Leovolti in that role. But I think we saw last season that maybe the squad's too big. And I know that's not a popular sentiment, but I think in women's football, there just aren't enough games to give 25 international players football. And I'd actually quite like to see the squad come down a player or two. I think it might, but then just have maybe more versatile players around. So some, like, you look at what Katie McCabe does in the squad, right? The fact that she's a brilliant left back and a brilliant left winger, and that keeps her involved. It means she can rotate with other players in that position, but she doesn't necessarily have to play every minute of every game. So I would prioritise DM, definitely, just because I think it's really the only gap in the squad, but I'd really like it to be a defensive midfielder who can also play centre-half. So just Lena Oberdorf, that'd do me.
Just throwing that in there again. I think we've been saying that for like the past two seasons.
We'll wish it into existence.
Yeah. I'm going to go a bit different, because obviously I think a CDM would be the very obvious answer. And I do agree that we definitely need a kind of backup to that. But I think I'm going to go a bit off script and say that I would really like to see a young winger. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with our wingers, because I think our front three are very, very good. But when you look at other teams, when you look at Barcelona with Claudia Pina, when you look at PSG with Diani in Baltimore, when you look at Lyon with Katarina Macario, with Melvin Malad, you look at Wolfsburg now with Julie Brand, you know, Lea Schuller is quite young as well. When you look at all these big teams, they have really, really strong young players coming up and making a difference in big games. And
who's
in
the Icelandic girl at Wolfsburg as well?
Jónsdóttir. She's outstanding. She's just outrunning everybody. So when you look at all these teams, they have young players who are going to be the best in the world and are already showing it quite young. Whereas we have a very experienced team. But you look at, I mean, we're not an old team, you know, we're still averaging probably mid-20s, but you look at Caitlin Forve, Beth Mead, you know, Noelle Maritz, Katie McCabe, Kim Little, Jordan Nobbs, you know, we're a relatively older team compared to other teams. So I would really like to see a young, good player coming up and wrecking havoc on the pitch, particularly on the wing. I think that's really important kind of position for us, because if you have, you know, a tired Beth Mead, a tired Caitlin Ford, you put on these fresh legs and boom, they're going to outrun anybody. So I would like to see Arsenal kind of get into the kind of trend of getting a really, not a really young player, but a young player that's already at a really high level and kind of letting them progress and grow with Arsenal. That would kind of be my dream.
That's a really, really good point. So for a start, I think you might get something close to your wish there, because I think it's quite likely the Brazilian forward Jesse Ferreira will join Arsenal. Don't have 100% confirmation on that at the moment, but I think it looks quite likely. And I think she's going towards that mold. Now, she can play down the centre as well, but she can definitely play wide. And I think she fits that mold, and she's someone who runs in behind and runs with the ball and is really good one-on-one, really good running off the shoulder. But I hadn't thought about it in the terms that you've just put it in. Like you said, you look at Diani, Baltimore, Jónsdóttir, Pina and players like that, like of having those kind of young up and coming, like, I guess, speedsters in the wide positions. I think that's a really, really good shout. And I think what you're seeing with the kind of the look at the attackers that Jonas himself has brought in, Stina, Tobin was his signing, interested in JC. These are direct players. These are players that run the channels. These are players that pin teams back, that look to run off the shoulder. And in Tobin's case, you know, probably like one of the best one-on-one wingers that women's football has ever seen. So again, very direct, takes people on, likes to beat players. Like, I think he really likes those really direct attackers. So I do think we will see a bit of that, and your wish may well be granted. I guess one of the positions we didn't discuss, and that's why I'm going to bring in this question, is goalkeeper. Because, Lydia Williams' contract is up, and I believe that she will leave this summer. So you could argue that like another goalkeeper would be quite a big need. But obviously Fran Stenson's there at the moment, in body anyway. And Lauren Jade _ asks, any idea on what on earth is happening with Fran Stenson? Since she was recalled from loan, there's been quite a few games she hasn't even been on the bench, let alone played. Seems like a fair bit of mismanagement over the last few years, but maybe I'm being unfair. So to put this into context, Fran Stenson signed in the summer of 2019, and she's played one game for Arsenal. She spent her first season on loan at Blackburn, which was reasonably successful. First half of last season on loan at Brighton, barely played, recalled, didn't play, and as Lauren says, barely featured in the squad. So I'd be really, really surprised if she stayed at Arsenal. After all that, what do you make of, I guess, the Fran Stenson situation, Alex?
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a confusing one when you have such a young keeper. And again, looking at the young player of, you know, the whole point of getting a young player who's already good is making them grow with the club. You know, you make them grow as a player, but then as they're growing with the club and bringing the club with them, if that makes sense. So it's just kind of a whole thing. And I don't think Fran has been given the chance to fully, like, grow at Arsenal. Obviously, you know, she's in training sessions, but if you're not getting game time, if you're not playing with Aaliyah Williamson, you know, in front of you, if you're not getting that confidence from being on the pitch, when her time is finally going to come to be on the pitch, it's going to be brand new for her. And, you know, being there since 2019, I think it is a bit of a shame that we've not let her kind of get comfortable in that position in like a match environment, because I think that's going to be big. So that was, I think that was an opportunity wasted. Because if she's been with us for this long already, I think that's big. You know, they're not just keeping her on for the hell of it. They're keeping her on because they do still believe in her, I would like to think. But if she's not getting match time, then it kind of goes to waste the whole point of having a young keeper grow up with Arsenal. So it is a bit of a shame. So hopefully we'll sort that out. But with Lydia Williams leaving, then it goes back to the question that we spoke about before of, do we want a strong number two to Manu, or do we want to, you know, start over again with a younger keeper and let Manu kind of mold them into her replacement, essentially?
Yeah, I think Fran, like, whatever, I mean, you have to say that Arsenal have played her once, and that was in November 2020 at London City Lionesses in the Conti Cup. You know, you brutally, you have to say that obviously she hasn't impressed that much. To not get more game time than that. From her point of view, I'm sure that privately she'd look back and think that she probably made a mistake coming to Arsenal, because she was incredibly highly rated. She was at Man City, where Arsenal got her from, and I imagine she looked at the situation at City, where they had Ellie Roebuck coming through, who's still a young goalkeeper and I think one of the best around. And she probably thought, well, Ellie Roebuck could potentially be there for 10 to 15 years, so there's no path for me there. And maybe in 2019, she thought, okay, more of a path at Arsenal. But when you look around at some of the young English keepers that have gone, like Hannah Hampton, Fran Bentley, Emily Ramsey, they've gone on loan to or signed for slightly lower WSL clubs and got game time. And you look at Hannah Hampton was at Birmingham. Now she's at Villa. She'll go higher than that in the game, Hannah Hampton. Hannah Hampton, I'm sure, will play for one of the big three at some point. But she's gone to Birmingham and Villa because she gets picked every week and she plays every week. And I'm sure, you know, Fran was very much in that company as a youth player, but very separate from that company now. And I'm sure that maybe she'll look, which is not to blame her for this. Like I say, in 2019, I can see why she thought there was a path at Arsenal, but there hasn't been. And essentially, at least 18 months of this 3 years she's had at Arsenal have been a bit of a waste, really, for her. And she probably would have been better off playing for someone lower down in the WSL, which is a real shame. I really hope she goes somewhere else and she plays and she fulfills her potential, because we haven't really seen it at Arsenal. But I know, like, this is a goalkeeper who, she was at Birmingham and maybe she should have stayed there, but she went to Man City and she went to Arsenal. You don't get signed by Man City and then Arsenal if you haven't got something about you. So I really hope she goes this summer, and I hope she goes somewhere and gets lots of game time and really kind of fulfills her potential and gets back on that plateau with some of those young English keepers. Question that I anticipated from Jeremy Bradley at Jeremy Bradley 49. Can Mana Iwabuchi get back into the team on a regular basis? She showed real skill in the early part of last season. Now, She had surgery on both ankles recently at the end of the season when she went back to Japan. They'd been causing her trouble last season. So it could be that, well, it's certainly to at least some extent, the reason we didn't see her much at the end of last season was for fitness reasons. But Alex, do you think that's the only reason that we didn't see her as much? Or do you see her fitting into a Jonas Idevall team?
I think it's a hard one. I think we've definitely talked about it before, where Mana Iwabuchi was kind of the missing piece of the midfield puzzle for a Joe Montemurro Arsenal and style of play. Whereas Jonas has kind of shifted that focus of the midfield in terms of, you know, the high press, the aggressiveness. And Mana Iwabuchi, I know we saw her at Villa, who have a different style of play, and she didn't fit in because the players around her and the team approach wasn't good, and she didn't do well. You know, she would play a good game, but it doesn't really matter because it just doesn't fit into the rest of the team. And I'm disappointed that that might be what's happening here. It's not just money, you know, it's Jordan not really fitting into a Jonas side, whether it be injuries or something else, but it's these players that fit in perfectly with the Joe Montemurro possession, you know, calm the rhythm down and be a bit more laid back in the sense of aggressive pressing, whereas Jonas is complete opposite. So when he's looking at a midfielder, I doubt that he's going to be looking at a very tiny human whose technical ability is insane, but doesn't have that aggressive, you know, feeling to them. And I'm not saying Manu Bucci cannot go and kind of body someone off the ball, but it's just not what Jonas is looking for, essentially, which is kind of sad. But I think, you know, if Jonas wants to make it work, I think there's definitely ways around to put Manu Bucci in and make her fit into the team and be very, very, very beneficial to us. But whether that's going to happen, I would think that it's not going to happen in the sense that we want it to happen. But again, that's not down to the quality of Mana. I think we all know the quality of Mana, and the reason why we're getting so mad about Mana not playing is because we know how good she is. But I think it's just down to kind of Mana's strengths and what Jonas is looking for not really fitting together.
I completely agree. Sadly, I don't see it happening for Mana at Arsenal for the reasons you've laid out. I mean, I think obviously a big blocker is Viv staying and playing in the number 10 position. That's a real blocker for her because she's going to play most games. And what I was talking about earlier in terms of, you know, Jonas bringing more physical players into the spine, I think Viv's another one, right? Jonas didn't really like Mana or Jordan in the number 10 or even Kim. But he likes Viv there, who's, you know, bigger and more physical than all of them. And so then it becomes a question of, well, can Mana fill one of the wide spots? Well, first of all, there's so much competition there anyway. And second of all, I really don't think that Jonas wants like that wide number 10. I think he likes his wingers to be wide and to take and to get crosses in and to take on fullbacks. Whereas if you play Mana out wide, she'll come in, which, like you say, perfect for a Joe team. There's an alternate timeline somewhere I'd love to be on where a couple of years ago, Arsenal get the Mana Iwabuchi signing done under Joe Montemurro, and perhaps Jules Roord doesn't happen, which is not. Like, Jules Roord's a really, really good player, but she felt very ill-fitted to me in a Joe Montemurro team. And ironically, I think Jules Roord would really fit into a Jonas team. Yeah. And so it just feels like we've fallen into the matrix somewhere where Mana was a signing. I mean, Arsenal tried to make it happen 2 years before it happened, but Mana was a signing that should have happened 2 years earlier. And maybe Jules Roord should have gone somewhere else for 2 years and then joined us under Jonas or something like that, where I think should have been more. Because you look at, like, Joe played DVD out wide on the left for a season. You know, he likes those number 10s out wide. I just don't. And he played Jordan out wide. I just don't think Jonas wants that. I think Jonas wants his wide players to be wide players, which is part of the reason I think maybe Nikita Paris hasn't quite clicked, because she's more of a wide player that likes to get in the box. And I think he likes that width and depth thing. So unfortunately, I don't see it happening for Mana, as much as maybe the injury makes me think, oh, okay, she probably would have played more minutes had she been fit or fitter. But I still don't see it happening, to be honest. But we'll see, I guess. Maybe I'm completely wrong, and maybe it was entirely down to fitness. But on a similar note, we had a question from Domi Kidowo at Dando MK, which I'm kind of going to skip over because I want to focus on one of the players. He asks about Iwabuchi, Nobbs and Paris not being starters, and should the inability to get the best out of our backups be a concern? We've kind of spoken about Jordan and Mana, so I'll skip to this question from Ross CH91. Would love to hear your thoughts on the rumours about Keats Paris leaving too. So I guess those are the three big players that weren't getting minutes, right? Mana, Jordan and Nikita. What do you think will happen with Nikita Paris, maybe even as soon as this summer, let alone next season?
I'm for Nikita Paris going somewhere else. my relationship with Nikita Paris is a very rough one.
It sounds like it.
It does. No, the thing is that I think Nikita Paris is a very, you know, she's a good player. There's no denying that. You know, she's played for Lyon, she's played for Man City, and she's done really well at these clubs. But I think she's a player that fits a very specific kind of mold, and she can't step outside of that, if that makes sense. I think she was a perfect fit at City, which is the reason why she got recruited by Lyon. But then you look at her at Lyon, and she was playing as a central striker as well as out wide. And, you know, the fans didn't like her. She didn't perform, you know, to the standard that she did at Man City. And then, you know, she comes to Arsenal, and it's kind of the same situation of, you know, she's a great player, but she didn't really click with Jonas, with the style of play, with the players. And that's just my concern from Nikita Paris. I think Nikita Paris is, yeah, just she fits a very specific style of play. And when she fits, she performs really well. But when it doesn't fit, you can't really get anything out of her on the pitch. I mean, you look at her stats in the WSL for Arsenal, and, you know, you expected her to, being that she was back in the WSL, being that she was back home and kind of in a more comfortable environment around national teammates and all that stuff, you expected her to perform a lot better than she did, regardless of whether she fit into the team and under Jonas or not. And she didn't really live up to that expectation. So I think that kind of says a lot about who she is as a player. And again, you know, no hard feelings, but it's just, she's a player that, yeah, like when she doesn't fit, she doesn't fit. And it's very obvious. And obviously that doesn't do anybody any favors for her or the club.
Yeah, completely agree. I think you're exactly right. She's a very specific type of player. And if you play to Nikita Paris's strengths, you get a world-class forward. And if you don't, you don't. It's kind of that simple. I think she will go. I think at the very least, the interest in Jessy Ferreira puts the writing on the wall for her, because Jessy is, you know, she's all those things I said. She's pacey. She likes to play on the shoulder. She's direct. Keats is all of those things. I think the issue for Keats is that she's a winger that likes to, you know, she's a wide striker, basically, which, if that's what you're after, is great. I don't think that's what Jonas is after. I think he's after wingers that feed strikers, basically. And I think the issue for Keats is one-on-one. She doesn't tend to beat players with the ball. She beats players off the ball.
Yeah.
She makes runs in behind. I think Jonas wants wingers that can beat players with the ball. And that's, Jessy can do that. Right, we've seen that Beth Mead can do that. He signed Tobin can do that. Katie McCabe can do that. Caitlin Ford is brilliant at doing that. He loves all of those players. But the players who aren't as direct with the ball at their feet, he doesn't like as much, I don't think, particularly in those wide areas. I think also for Keats, you know, the World Cup's next year in 2023. I think she'll want to go. I don't know that for sure. I don't have any privileged info on this other than the fact that there are clubs interested in her, obviously. I got a feeling she might rock up at Man United or somewhere like that. I think that would be a really, really good place for her to go, not least because Man U don't... I mean, they have Alessia Russo, but the thing is, like, coming into a team with, like, Ada Hegerberg, Vivian Miedema, Stina Blackstenius, like, they're the main goal scorers in your team, right? When she was at City, they didn't have that, like, really, really kind of very obvious central striker who scores all your goals. I think United would be a really good move for her, actually, because I think she'd be pretty central to the attack. And I think she won't want another season like this with the World Cup next year. And with the amount of competition there is in that England squad for the wide spots, and now Chloe Kelly's fit again, and so Keats might keep her place in the Euro squad because Chloe Kelly was out for so long. Still not definite because Chloe is back, but I think she'll want to go somewhere else and play. And I think that'll be the best for everyone concerned, basically. And like you say, she's a really good player. It's just, I don't think she's a Jonas player.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Let's look at this one, another hypothetical, at Moniface7, who is at Moniface77 on Twitter. If you could bring back one former Arsenal player, retired or not, who would you bring back and why?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Former Arsenal player. Do you have the answer to this, Tim?
I have a quick answer for this, yes.
There you go.
So the thing is, I'd look at what Arsenal need, because it would be easy to say Kelly Smith, but like when you've got Vivian Miedema, I think that would almost be a waste to have them both. Jane Ludlow, for me, central midfielder, can play at the base of the midfield, could play at, in the number eight as well, played in both positions. Big, strong, hard as fuck, scores loads of goals. So Jane Ludlow for me.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was kind of overthinking it in the sense that, yeah, I'm looking at it the same way of what we need. You know what? I'm going to go, I think at the kind of peak, I wouldn't mind having a Vicky Losada back in the midfield.
Fair. I wouldn't mind that either.
Yeah.
Do you think Vicky's a player who might move back a bit? Like move to the back of the midfield to be more of a, because she was always like when she was at Arsenal, she was quite box to box.
I mean, yeah, towards the end of her Barcelona career, she was more of a CDM, yeah. That would sit back. She would kind of replace Patri Guijarro, yeah, in the midfield and have Alexia and Aitana in front of her. So yeah, definitely she would be kind of, you know, at the stage that she is at her career. Like if we would get her, you know, right now, she would definitely be kind of that CDM that would dictate the rhythm. Obviously not as kind of, you know, snake hippie as Leo Valti, but she would be kind of that CDM that you would, she would kind of be a Leo Williamson, but a CDM in terms of like, she would get the ball, calm the play down, dictate the rhythm and like start that attacking play, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which I think is obviously, you know, that's kind of one of my favorite positions, and Vicky Losada is, you know, we all know how good she is at playing in the midfield.
Yeah, 100%. Vicky was, when she was at Arsenal, was possibly my favorite player at that time. Excellent player. I wouldn't argue with that at all. Let's go to the last couple. So again, slightly off beam, actually, a question about Manchester City, which I think is actually a really interesting thing to discuss, even though we're not the Manchester City women Arsecast. But obviously they're losing some big players, like Jill Scott, like, of course, that, you know, that's not a player they didn't want to lose, as it were. And, you know, Karen Bardsley, like those players are like, Jill's not quite retiring, but, you know, she's been on loan twice. She's 35. That's fairly amicable. But I think, you know, Georgia Stanway, Lucy Bronze, Caroline Weir, they are players that Manchester City did not want to lose, but they have. We can only speculate on the reasons for them losing so many big players. But John Booth, again, at John_Booth_74 asks, is the exodus at City being overhyped? They were the form team towards the end of last season. Do you see them being more of a threat for the title this year?
I would think it relies heavily on who they get in and how smart they are with their recruitment. I mean, I've said it on Twitter, you know, these, you know, good players wanting to leave Man City should come as no surprise. And I do mean that with full force against Man City, you know, in a very bad way of these players deserve more. And yeah, grand, you know, Man City did well to get back and have, you know, beat Chelsea in the final and stuff. But essentially, I think the way I see Man City is the success of the team comes down to individual brilliance rather than overall, you know, brilliance from a manager, for example, who kind of has reins on how to, you know, make his team kind of reach their full potential. So, you know, having these players leave, you know, Georgia Stanway, she's arguably at the peak of her career. And going to a team like Bayern Munich, who is playing at constantly a high level and will get far in the Champions League, is not a surprise. A Lucy Bronze, who, you know, came from a very successful few years with Lyon, who won the Champions League multiple times, it shouldn't always be a kind of, you know, surprise that she wants to get back at that level potentially, or, you know, just kind of go and enjoy her football. Should it be in the NWSL, for example? Caroline Weir, another one, you know, she's been having an amazing career, and she deserves, I mean, by far, she deserves to be a player who wins the Champions League. And, you know, unfortunately, Scotland aren't favorites to win, you know, a major tournament. So for Caroline Weir, for example, her kind of only way of winning a major trophy would be through a club, and Man City are nowhere near winning the Champions League anytime soon. So, you know, these players leaving to kind of look for something better shouldn't come as a surprise, essentially. And I think, yeah, it's not shocking. And then, you know, the replacements that are rumored around to have, you know, Leila Wahabi, for example, to come in and replace, you know, Lucy Bronze, essentially. You have Dana Castellanos, who would come in and replace Georgia Stanway. I don't know if the replacements would be... The replacements, you know, the names are good, but I think it would depend on kind of how they fit into the club and how the club accommodate to them, which, you know, could go really surprisingly really well, or it could go horribly wrong. But yeah, I think Man City are a special club in the sense that they have arguably they have, you know, when the players that have now left were still there, I would say arguably they have one of the most talented squads in the WSL. But I don't think they have someone who knows how to kind of use it to the max potential. Because can you imagine, you know, a Lauren Hepp and Chloe Kelly, a Bunny Shaw, you know, being kind of managed to their greatest potential? That team would be unstoppable. But unfortunately, I don't think that's the situation at City right now. So yeah, I think the exodus is, you know, it's big players, but at the same time, you know, you still have Lauren Hemp and Chloe Kelly on the wing, so you can't really write off Man City yet.
Yeah. And the reality is the margins between the bigger teams are so small that I'd never write any of the, you know, the quote unquote big three off. And I think John's right in that City were the form team in the second half of the season. I think that was also true of the season before, though. I think they were really the form team. And then, you know, they had lots of injury issues at the beginning of last season. And I think that might be quite telling as well, that quite a lot of those players they lost for the first half of last season didn't come back as quickly as they expected. So Steph Horton kind of broke down again. Lucy Bronze needed surgery, and that was identified quite late in the day. Chloe Kelly, I don't know exactly what happened with Chloe Kelly, but, you know, she was out for 12 months with an ACL. That they're usually like 9-10 months. And then you had Ellie Roebuck, who was out for like the whole of the first half of last season. And again, I don't think that was entirely expected. So I don't know if there are things happening behind the scenes there as well. I can only speculate. I don't know, but I'm just looking at some of those injuries. And I do think it's worrying for them as well. Like, listen, Bayern Munich are a really, really strong team. You know, Caroline Weir, we're told it looks like Madrid for her. Like Madrid, you know, they're quite a young team. Like in women's football terms, I don't think a player in their prime like Caroline Weir should be considering Real Madrid a favourable option to Manchester City at this stage, maybe in a couple of years. Like, I do think there are some alarm bells there. And Lucy Bronze came back and only for 2 years and is gone again. I think that does look, if I were a Man City fan, I'd be worried about that, but I'm not, so I won't worry about it. But at the same time, like, I'm not writing them off for anything next year, because these things are decided by very, very small margins, and ultimately they still came away with a trophy last year, and I think were quite unlucky not to win two in terms of the FA Cup. But again, Sam Kerr happened to them, and that's something a lot of teams can say, unfortunately. There's a question here from Ricky O, who is at O Ricky. If you don't mind, Alex, I might just address, just because it's like a fairly factual question, but it says, I saw a graph which shows Chelsea did much better at defending set pieces than us in last season. Do we have to hire a specialised set piece coach to address it? So what happens on the Arsenal coaching staff with set pieces is Leanne Hall, who is one of the assistant managers, and Sebastian Barton, who is the goalkeeping coach. They look after the set piece element of training. And obviously they're both, Leanne's also a goalkeeper coach as well. So they come from like, they have a really good perspective on it. And Arsenal scored a lot of goals from set pieces last season. Now on the defending side, to be honest, I think in set piece data, I think set piece data is very noisy, basically, and it swings wildly from one season to the next. So I wouldn't be surprised if, for example, Arsenal do much better at defending them next year than Chelsea. And I think a lot of Arsenal's issues in that were about the lack of continuity in defence. So, you know, there were centre-back injuries. Lear was injured. Hafayeli was injured. Jen Beattie was in and out. Simone Boye was in and out. And then when you look at the end of last season, when Arsenal were basically picking the same back four for every game, Arsenal didn't concede from set pieces. So I think it's more down to that than the need to hire a specific coach. But there are two coaches who basically coach all the set pieces, and that is a continuation from Joe Montemurro as well. Basically, Jonas said he thought Leanne and Sebastian were doing a really good job on that, particularly early in the season when we were scoring loads of headers from corners, and so he wanted to keep them going. So obviously they do other things other than set pieces, but they are effectively the set piece coaches. Two questions to finish off. First one from Mikey Moriarty at Mikey Moriarty 95. We might have partially addressed this, but do you think another forward will be signed to rotate with, so centre forward to rotate with Stina, or do you think Viv will continue to cover that role when needed, Alex?
That's, I mean, yeah, that's a hard one to answer now ahead of kind of, I think it's quite early to speculate on that. I think that would have to be a conversation that Viv and Jonas would have to have, and kind of, I think that Viv has upper hand in the sense that she has kind of some kind of liberty to ask for whatever she wants. So if she doesn't want to play central striker, I think Jonas has to kind of conform to that.
And she did say that playing at 10 was, you know, one of the reasons she signed on as well.
Precisely. So, you know, I mean, Viv is always going to be kind of, she's going to become a backup in the sense that, you know, should Stina be injured, you know, Beth Mead can play in that position, Caitlin Ford can play in that position. So I think there's plenty of options that we have to kind of replace Stina in that position. But then whether, I think it would be smart to have a pure number nine replacement for Stina. Because again, you know, Beth, we all know, is better on the wing. Caitlin is better on the wing because they have that 1v1. They have that aggressive press. And the press and the style play that Jonas wants to play, I think, is a very specific style play for a number nine, which is why Viv suits better as a 10, why Beth is on the wing, why Caitlin's on the wing. I think putting Viv, Beth and Caitlin as a replacement for Stina in the number nine position is kind of a bit like just a quick plaster, sort of say, over the problem. I would like to see a number nine being signed. Whether that's a priority, I don't think so. I think that would be maybe one for further down the line to see how, I think there's other positions that require a bit more prioritizing before we get to that point. But for now, there's enough replacement for the number nine that Viv doesn't have to do it. But eventually, I think it would probably be necessary.
Yeah, I think the reality is that Caitlin will continue to be that kind of that backup number nine because she's got a lot of the qualities that Viv likes in, that Jonas likes in the striker. But also Jesse can play through the middle, does play through the middle for Madrid, albeit she plays it in a very different way, obviously, and she plays on the shoulder. And like, I think you can do that for Madrid in Spain, like with all due respect to mid-table team who perhaps don't face, you know, packed defences who are sitting in their penalty area. But, you know, Jesse can play that role, but I imagine she would come to play more as a wide forward. I agree with you. I don't think it's a massive priority. I wouldn't complain. But I think in reality, Caitlin will probably continue to understudy that nine position. And obviously we can throw Miedema into the mix, which is not a bad player to throw into the mix. And like I said, I do think we do get a bit carried away with the depth thing and like need to remember that, you know, it's 22 league games It's not a lot of football. The Conti Cup isn't there in the group stage anymore, assuming we get through our Champions League qualifier. And so, you know, you're looking at like 30, like maximum 40 games. That's not a lot to spread around 25 players. But one, like I said, near the beginning of the podcast, I do think we should almost consider Stina a new signing for this year. I think if she stays fit, she'll challenge for the Golden Boot. I think she will be Arsenal's top scorer. But I think with the kind of, you know, that's three big players in Caitlin Ford, Stina Blackstenius and Vivian Miedema, who can all comfortably play up front. So, and you know, you potentially throw Jesse in there as well. I think it's pretty well covered, to be honest. So I wouldn't make it a priority. Last question. In fact, it's two questions that I'm going to tie together about playing at the Emirates, because the other thing that's come out since the last time we recorded is that Arsenal have committed to playing six games at the Emirates next season. So again, assuming we qualify for the group stage, which is not a given because there's a Champions League qualifier still to negotiate, but should that happen, then Arsenal will play all three of their Champions League group games at Emirates Stadium. I think the thing that we should mention on top of that is at least one and potentially two, it just depends how the fixtures would fall, of those home games would take place while the World Cup is on for the men. So Arsenal men will not be playing during that period. It will come during the period while the World Cup's on, where perhaps, you know, people have been missing going to live football. Maybe sitting on their sofas watching the World Cup, wanting to go to a stadium again. I think that would be a really, really good opportunity. And they'll play three WSL games there next year. And I think the first question was actually from Phil at Phil AWFC. He asks what we think the third WSL home game will be, assuming that two of them are Chelsea and Spurs. And Kieran Bannon at C Bannon Official, do you think more marketing is needed for the planned Emirates games, and what would a successful attendance be?
I think the marketing speaks for all of us. That definitely is. I think, look, the potential that we have to play at the Emirates is big, and the fact that Arsenal haven't really exploited that yet is a bit of a disappointment. And I know this season, when we had that Wolfsburg match midweek and we had the North London derby at the Emirates in the weekend, all focus went onto the North London derby, and there was, you know, a decent 20K crowd that was expected at the Emirates. But if Arsenal are, you know, and I understand that it's hard to kind of manage both, but if Arsenal is so unable to promote a Champions League match midweek, and, you know, we got what, 4K? At that Wolfsburg match, that is, I mean, to put it in a very blunt manner, that is really upsetting and really sad when you look at the potential of what it has. And it's just a bit disappointing. You know, we've talked about the simplicity of marketing and kind of putting the name out there, when, you know, Chelsea do it so well, of little things, of just putting flyers around the, you know, Kingston, around the stadium, and just putting, you know, there's a match this day. It's not even like hard in the sense that you're not, you know, you're not paying millions for an influencer, for example, to do a video of marketing a match. You know, you're marketing a football match. You know, Arsenal do it for the men very, very easily. So it's really just applying the same concept of that into the women's game and starting, you know, it's going to be hard to do it, but I think we need to start kind of putting the men and women in the same category in terms of you're promoting a football match. You're not promoting women's football. You're not promoting men's football. You're promoting a football match at an iconic stadium. So once we start doing that kind of, you know, mentality of it's not that hard to promote a football match, because everyone does it so often. Once we get that kind of sorted, I think we can move forward potentially with getting bigger crowds and stuff, but it is really disappointing. And if, you know, we are intending to kind of play all these matches at the Emirates, especially Champions League matches, I do hope that more marketing goes behind it and it's kind of giving the attention that it deserves. I mean, we've seen it in, you know, in Germany, in Spain, in France, the attention that the Women's Champions League matches have been given. And that's what's needed here, because we haven't used that yet. You know, between Arsenal playing at the Emirates and not really marketing for it, and then Chelsea marketing for it, but only playing at King's Meadow. You know, it's kind of an unbalance in general when you look at the Champions League matches that are held in England.
Yeah, so on this, I've spoken to someone at Arsenal about this in like a good position of responsibility. And what I'd say is Arsenal are really ambitious about this. And like, I'm not just saying that to spin a line or repeat what I've been fed. I had a good conversation with someone I know well. They are ambitious about this. That's why you're seeing them ramp this up. I think in fairness to them, the Tottenham game, you know, the North London derby. Now, I think it's right that, you know, I think it's right to say that more marketing went into that than the Wolfsburg game, for example. But had that have taken place on the day it was scheduled, it would have been about 20,000, which I think would have been a really, really good attendance. But on Arsenal's side, they're really ambitious about doing this, about ramping this up, about this being regular. And you know, different clubs have different outlooks on this. Chelsea and Man City, they own their women's stadiums. So that's, I think, the reason why you don't see them play like at the Etihad or at Stamford Bridge that often, because they own their stadiums and they're looking to naturalise themselves in their own stadiums. Whereas, you know, Arsenal don't have that, albeit Arsenal invest a lot in Boreham Wood. People might have seen that Boreham Wood are making further investment over this summer and over the next couple of years. I can tell you that Arsenal are involved in that and that Arsenal are putting money towards that. That is why the South Stand will be called the Clock End once that gets redeveloped. But Arsenal are really, really ambitious about using the Emirates. And like, people at the club are very aligned on this. Jonas wants this as well. I know the players are really, really keen on it. And they're really keen on, you know, the idea that, like, when they played Spurs in May, they just kind of said it felt like home. Like, it, you know, we were used to playing there. We'd had a good few games there. It just felt like home. And obviously, you know, everyone knows how to get to the Emirates and things like that. The other thing that Arsenal have done that I think deserves some commendation is when you renew your men's season ticket, you are given the option at the point of purchase. And I'm literally looking at my season ticket renewal email right now because it came through at midday today. There is a section in the email that says support Arsenal Women at Emirates Stadium. We will host 6 Arsenal Women's first team games at Emirates Stadium next season. And you can be at every one of them. Simply add our AWFC fixture package to your basket here. So at the point of your men's season ticket renewal, you can pay an extra £50 and get into all 6 of those games. So that's a really easy and quick way of selling lots of tickets. So that email is going to like around 40,000 season ticket holders. Let's say 5,000 decide, yeah, I'll pay an extra £50 and get into all 6 of those games. Now, those, you know, people might not turn up at all 6 of those games or whatever, but at least the club have got the money up front and they've made it easy at the click, the literal click of a button. 40,000 Arsenal fans have got that email saying book all 6 games right here when you renew your season ticket. And ordinarily £50 would feel like a lot more money, but when you're about to put down somewhere between £1,000 and £1,800, maybe an extra £50 doesn't feel as big an investment. So that, like, I can say, you know, and I can hear the cries of Lackey already, but I do think that Arsenal mean business on this, and that this is a serious part of their strategy with the women's team over the next few years and their marketing of the women's team. And I think players like Vivian Miedema are a big part of the reason that they are, at least for now, convinced about the size of the ambition of the club is things like this. But I agree with you, Alex. I think, like, let's promote all of those games, you know, fairly equally. At least there is likely to be a Champions League group game in there that's perhaps not, you know, like the equivalent of Kerj last season. Like, how many people would have come to the Emirates to see that? Not sure, but that's why you sell in a package, I guess. So yeah, definitely. As for the speculation about the other team, because I think it's right that it probably will be Chelsea and Spurs, I think that will just depend. It could be City. But I think it will depend on when the men's international breaks fall and you have these like women's football weekends. So, you know, if Arsenal get Everton, for example, in one of those weekends, it will be Everton or West Ham or someone like that. So I think the preference would be for it to be City. But at the same time, it will just depend on how the fixtures fall. And I do think there could be something to be said for playing the big games at the Emirates. And it almost, because like in the WSL, frankly, the games are distinct. You have the big games and the not big games. And I think there'd be an advantage to saying, right, let's play all the big teams at the Emirates. So we have a strategy for all of them that fits and we're not moving around. So it's almost like, right, Emirates is our big game turf, bigger pitch, bigger crowd. We can adjust accordingly for all of those games. So I think that's maybe in the thinking. But that was quite a long ramble on my part, just to say that, like, I don't think Arsenal are doing this lightly. And I know the players and the coach are behind this. So, fingers crossed. And because the other advantage is they get the men's marketing. Then they get the marketing on the men's side, so they have all that resource they can call on, and let's hope they use it. Alex, I know you've got another meeting to go to in a couple of minutes, so let's leave it there. Thank you very much, as always.
Always a pleasure. It was nice to be a bit more positive about Arsenal this time.
Yeah, indeed. It's amazing what happens when they're not playing football games.
No football matches. They've made every signs. It's good.
Exactly. We've got another two podcasts lined up before the Euros kicks off, and we've got some really, really stellar guests, some absolute A-listers lined up to talk about a few things. There'll be some Euros chat, but in the next 4 weeks, there will be another two podcasts for you with lots of guests doing lots of talking. So it won't be me talking quite so much. But until then, thanks so much for submitting all your questions. Thanks so much for downloading and listening. Like I've said a million times before, we're not going dark over the summer. There will be plenty of content, both written and audio, and there'll be loads of audio content coming for you in the next few weeks. So until then, take care of yourselves. Thanks and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.